You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Bryce Brown. Bryce, thanks so much for being with me today.
This is great. Thanks for having me.
Bryce, I want to talk about a few things. I want to talk about your artist-run experiment, but also your work. So let's begin with what's happening with your work. What's going on in your studio at the moment?
Well, at the moment, I'm actually getting ready for a show in 2020 at a little museum down in Baltimore. And that show is, I'm doing sculptural pieces that are cast paper, and I'm going to be doing a video as well. I'll be working with a dancer named Christopher Williams. We're going to be constructing a bunraku puppet, which is a Japanese, traditional Japanese puppet. And we're going to choreograph a dance for it, and I'll shoot the video, and I'll do a sound sculpture as well. But it's the work that I'm doing now, like the past work and then this show that I'm working on, it's trying to deal with what it means to have a body and what it means for us to be physical beings in the world and how basically after we die, all that's left is the memory of us and what carries those memories. Is it the objects? Is it the ideas that are in the objects? So that's sort of what I'm working with now in the studio.
So that's interesting. Yeah, let's explore that a little bit. I mean, the cast paperwork, I know you've done really interesting projects where you cast paper flip phones, right? That's basically, I mean, just to describe the process, that's using Japanese paper that's wet and then you kind of wrap it around the object, or is that handmade paper? How does the casting process work?
Yeah, I guess technically it's called a laminate cast. So, for example, for the show coming up, it's a house museum, much like the Frick Museum in New York, which means you're walking through someone's house and you sort of see how they live. It's set up with furniture and stuff. So I'm going to be removing one piece of furniture and then casting another object to replace out of paper. So it's sort of a stand-in for the physical presence of the people who used to occupy the house. And I'm still deciding what objects to cast now. But the process is it's a kozu paper. It's a handmade Japanese paper, really, really thin. And then you have to, you wet it, and then you coat whatever object you're casting in a methyl cellulose, sort of like an archival glue. And so you paint the object.
Like a wheat paste or something, right?
It's kind of like a wheat paste, except it dries clear and doesn't damage. I think wheat paste has a little coloration to it once it dries. And then you just cover the object in the paper, and then when it dries, you cut it off, and you have this wonderful, it's like the husk, almost as if you're creating a memory of the object, you know, with this husk of the object through paper. So it's kind of a cool thing, and it's got this wonderful sort of translucent glow to it because it's that white handmade paper. So it's a really cool process, actually, and it's allowed me to, I've done cast things before, you know, cast glass, and I work a lot with silver. But it's kind of nice to work with the paper because it's light, it's easy, and I can move faster with it. I don't have to work with, you know, pouring hot metals and stuff like that.
Right. So to talk a little bit more about this museum show. So I want to talk here about the performance as well. But you're using the objects in the museum, like chairs and I guess other objects, and you're removing them, which is from their collection, obviously, casting that object and then replacing that object with the cast of itself?
Right. I think it's going to be a combination of exactly that, where I'll take a specific object from one of the rooms, whether it's a chair or a vase or whatever, and I'll cast that in paper and then put it back in place so that as people walk through, they'll see that something's slightly off, but they're not quite sure what it is. And it's a sort of a subtle intervention as a way to reintroduce the physical body, the human presence back into this museum. But then I'll also, because some of the pieces, because it's a museum, I won't be able to cover in methyl cellulose and cast in plastic paper. So I'll probably choose a similar object or something else, like take a chair out and then put a table that I have that I've cast in its place. So some other paper object. But for example, there's a kitchen, you know, I'll probably cast paper pans, like frying pans, and put those in there. Maybe like a sculptural vase. I mean, it's Right now, I'm still trying to figure out what it is, but because it's a house museum, there is a little gallery space. So there'll be it's like a two-part show. There'll be a little gallery space where I'll have parts of the video, and I'll also have like a sound sculpture because I want to introduce sounds of myself. So I'm exposing the previous residents of the museum, but I'm also want to expose myself as well in the gallery space. And then the physical museum itself is where I'm going to have the cast objects and then more of the video works.
I want to talk about those. I want to go through that. So it is really clear. And it sounds like the objects that'll be in there, that'll happen throughout the exhibit, or the exhibit will open with all these objects. Will objects keep appearing from there, or it'll open with all the cast objects?
They'll keep appearing. Yeah, they won't be. They'll be very subtle. I'm hoping that you'll walk to the museum to experience the museum, and then you'll see, you know, in each room one or two of these objects, and it'll keep bringing you back to you're in someone's home. It was someone's personal space, and it'll keep bringing you back to that this is a museum, but these are objects that they live with, to bring the focus back to how we exist when we're dead, which is through the objects that we collect or we make, or, you know, the memories contained in these pieces. So that's what
it sounds really lovely and sounds kind of you know, like ghosts of things. And as you're saying this, it's almost kind of an incomprehensible thing, right? What is left of us when we're gone, and what is the body really really about, or all these symbols. So then the videos, there'll be video in there as well as a dancer and a performance?
Right. Well, so the video is another way to introduce another physical, like another figure into the show. And so I didn't want to actually film a dancer, even though I've done that before, but I thought it'd be really interesting to build a puppet as a stand-in for the form. And I'm working with this guy who used to be Basil Twist's assistant, and he himself is a very well-known and very good choreographer. And so we're going to build this Japanese-style puppet, and then he's going to choreograph it for me, and then I'll video it, and then I'll project those somewhere in the room, maybe on the ceiling or something. But then I'll also have the puppet in the space, because there's a private theater, believe it or not, in this house. It's kind of amazing. There was a designer named Leon Bakst who worked for Diaghilev and the Ballet Russe back in the early 20th century, and he did this personal theater in this museum in Baltimore. So
wow.
I'm going to also tie that back in. Yeah, it's like super cool.
Because when we talk about personal theater, then we're not talking about a giant TV screen. You're talking about like a theater for actors and dancers.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. It has a little stage. It was a bowling alley, so even weirder. It was a personal bowling alley. Talk about, you know, having money that they then turned into a little private theater, and it probably seats maybe 20 people. You know, it's super tiny and intimate, but kind of amazing.
That's cool. Sounds beautiful. And before I move on to the next talk about your artist-run experiment, how did this? Do you remember how this type of work began with your interest in the body and what remains after the body? Was there something that started off this kind of work and exploration?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the easy answer is a basic existential crisis, but. You know, like what's going on? And I think that actually, I mean, I said that glibly, but it's kind of true. You know, I think that's when we get to talk about this other experiment that I've done, it kind of came out of that as well. But I did this other video project that was based on a book by Yukio Mishima, and it was about becoming obsessed with the body and about how you have to destroy something that you are obsessed with in order to liberate yourself. And then at that time, it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I started to get really interested in the things that surround us and these objects and what it means to collect these things and have these things, chairs, clothing, et cetera, and how when we're gone, you know, that's what we're remembered by, is this sort of the detritus of our life. And it just kind of felt kind of sad and empty. And so now I'm trying to understand what it means to have a body, that we then accumulate all these things around it, and then how do we deal with that through our lives? Because I don't think most people go through their life actually investigating that, you know, like, what are we doing? And we have this machine that we occupy for this short period of time while we're alive, and what do we do with it?
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about your other experiment, the Milton Art Bank. Can you tell me how that started and what that is? It sounds like that somehow dovetails into the existential crisis, which it was a good way to put it, because I think, you know, we all have some experiences like that, whether it's, you know, a brush with mortality or just a, you know, I remember when I was, I think, 12 years old, realizing that my mother was going to die, and, you know, and, mm-hmm. and asking her, and however she was placating me was the first kind of awareness of, wow, you know, everything really isn't going to be around. It's sort of just stunning.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And once you realize that, I mean, it kind of changes. I mean, hopefully it changes your perspective. It makes you maybe be more aware and more present and more appreciative of what's going on. So the Milton Art Bank, you know, I had this crazy idea to do an experimental art space in New York City. And I'd been showing in the city for a while and, you know, had a pretty good career. But there was always something about the New York art world that really fucking just pissed me off. And it just felt really vacant and soul crushing. And, you know, you'd work for years on these bodies of work and you'd put them in these white boxes. And the same people would show up, and you'd have the same conversations, and it just felt really, really closed and sealed, and just felt like making the work was a dead end in a sense, and I just didn't feel energized. So I thought, okay, I'm going to open a space that removes commerce completely from it, and it's going to be just this really cool space where artists can do whatever they want. They can fail bigly, they can succeed bigly, like whatever. And I realized pretty quickly that I couldn't do it in New York because A, it's very expensive, and also it's an overserved community, so it'd be lost in the noise of all the other cool stuff that's happening. And at the time I was thinking about it, I also have a house in Pennsylvania, a little small town about 2 hours out of New York, and it just so happened that it's very, you know, serendipitous that this old bank building on the market. And so I was like, well, that's a sign. So I bought it, I renovated it, and then last May, actually it's coming up on the 1 year anniversary, I opened it. And it's been this kind of amazing, it's an experiment. It's an experiment to see, can art still matter? Can art still affect change in a community? Can, if you remove art from the cultural centers of like New York and Los Angeles or whatever, and you remove commerce from it, because nothing's for sale, you know, I'm not actively pursuing any kind of press or sale. I just want to bring cool art to the small town and see if it can do something. And it's been a very interesting past few months, to be honest about that. We've had some people.
That's exciting. So, I mean, you make it sound very easy. You know, you bought the bank and you decided to do this, but that sounds like a good amount of capital and also renovation.
Well, it's Central Pennsylvania, so it's actually pretty cheap. You know, I mean, that's sort of thing is it's because of where it's located. It's a very depressed little town with a high rate of poverty, That's why I was able to actually buy this bank. I mean, it was really, really cheap, surprisingly. And I'm doing everything on a shoestring budget. It's very DIY. It's just me doing it all. The shows are really, really long. I have they're like 3 months each because I can only do so much. So, but I have a habit of not really thinking things through too much and just doing things. And so I think if I had maybe thought through this more, I probably wouldn't have done it. But I mean, I do other curatorial practices with like this arts journal that I do, and so this sort of feeds into that curatorial practice as well.
Lot of writing in the past as well, so it would seem like this is a sort of a perfect fit to run an experiment like this. But why wouldn't you have done it again? What do you think is not working, or you would have done differently?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I was thinking about this last night actually, because I was thinking about this interview. You know, one of the things last year when I was talking about it, I was saying that the dialogue, you know, I'm trying to find out, can art still matter? And that it's all about the dialogue. That, you know, when somebody walks in, and this has happened, and they say, you know, what is this shit? This isn't art. Then I say, well, what is art? What do you think is art? Why is this shit? Why, you know, let me tell you why I think this might be art. Maybe I don't know what is art. You know, like I think what the Milton Art Bank is less about putting on exhibitions and trying to change maybe like one bored kid's life, which would be amazing. But I think it's more about the process of asking all these questions. Like, well, why are we making art? Because as artists, right, in our studios, we sort of know what we're doing, but we really don't know what the fuck we're doing. So it's kind of like, we're doing these things. Are we really interrogating what we're doing? Are we really sure that, when we're making these exhibitions and working on these bodies of work, you know, what is the point of that? And what we're putting stuff out in the world. And so I think with the Art Bank, it's about asking those questions and trying to get the community actually to engage in that type of curious question and answer process, more so than them coming in and being like, wow, this is an amazing painting, and then going away. So,
well, that's exciting. So the shows are coming in from around. I mean, that's, I just love the kind of way you're moving through it in seemingly kind of intuitive ways and experimental ways, as opposed to the way like a nonprofit would set up something like this and have a board and everything. How is it funded, or how do you keep it going? Because it sounds like it's not a place where work is sold or that has funding.
Right. Well, that was one of the things I was very clear about. I'm not a nonprofit for sure, because I think a nonprofit is just like any other gallery, because you're fighting for, you know, very small funding streams, and you have to have a board, and you have a lot of restrictions actually as a nonprofit. And I did a lot of research about alternative art spaces that popped up, you know, like the Kitchen and stuff in the 70s and all those wonderful spaces. They pretty quickly became nonprofits, and it was kind of sad, because at that point they locked themselves into a mission statement and all that stuff. And I wanted this to be anything and everything, and super freewheeling and super flexible and fluid. So that's why there's no commerce at all. And if somebody, in fact, this is happening for the current show, two works have sold out of it, but I put the person who wants to buy it in touch with the artist directly, and they transact that completely, and I'm out of it. I want nothing out of it, which is great, because then the artist, you know, has a collector. But right now it's all self-funded. I mean, I much to my husband's, you know, chagrin, like, I'm just funneling all of my spare cash into this project. So.
and so, you know, I mean, it's something that's obviously giving you something back from that, right? I mean, idea, that's quite a kind of spare cash project. It's, the space is, looks like it's gorgeous and big, and the building is stone, right? Like a bank.
Yeah, it's an old bank from 1920. It's cool because it was built as a bank in 1920, and then it became the public library in like 32, you know, after the big stock market crash. And then I actually bought it from the public library. So it has this wonderful arc from being built as commerce and then going through the public library and now into this sort of crazy art experiment. So I kind of love that. But, you know,
go on. I was going to ask how you select artists for the show, but first tell me what you were going to say. One thing that's also interesting.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, one thing that's been really cool is I realized pretty quickly, you know, I mean, I'm a New Yorker. I have this little house out in Pennsylvania. It's a small, very conservative town in Pennsylvania. And so I realized pretty quickly that like, most of these people don't know what a gallery is, and they might not even know what art is. I mean, who knows what they know? And I'm very, very sensitive to, I don't want to be, I know what culture is. This is a culture hammer. This is good for you. I'm a New Yorker. Like, I'm trying not to have that. And so one of the things that I started to do was to actually work on public projects and to take art out of the Art Bank and into the streets of this little town, to get people to realize, oh, you know, this is for us. We can access this. And so I had five muralists come from Bushwick last year and do these amazing murals. Like, they were all super excited to be part of this project, and they came and they did it because they love the idea of this small town getting this art revitalization. And I've got another awesome muralist from Philly coming this year to do a big mural. So that's been kind of cool to actually see how, you know, maybe the public realm where you put art in is how you can actually see art affecting people, because you take it on their terms. I don't know. It's been an interesting thing.
That is interesting, yeah, because I guess it's also about, I mean, the conversation you have as people walk in there, and as you say, they say, what is this shit? And you say, you know, well, I don't know, you know, what is shit to you? You know, I mean, that's an interesting conversation that, you know, isn't preaching to the converted like so much in New York. You know, you don't get that in New York because people are used to seeing it and either are aware of it or are kind of hip to what's happening, or they're just not going to say anything about it, you know?
Exactly. And the conversations I've been having, you know, I had a show, this was a couple of shows ago. It's a couple that live in New York. They're called Gibson Recoder. They're not married, but they're, you know, husband and wife. And I don't know. Anyway, they're, they've been in a couple of Whitney Biennials. They've had shows all over the world, and they work with Expanded Cinema, and they use the language of like physical, the media that film is used, like the projectors and actual film. And they did these really, they're hyper-conceptual sculptures, and I thought it might be a little bit of a stretch for the people in Milton. But I had some very interesting conversations that I would never have in New York, because in New York you would immediately start with structuralism and, you know, Stan Brackett. Like, you would go there, right, because you're talking with someone else who has a master's degree. But out here, it's kind of like, well, that's funny. Why is that there? Like, what the fuck is that? And so it's been really interesting to re-see art that I've been trained to look at in a certain way in a different way. So,
well, as you're saying also, as you said earlier, you know, if one bored kid thinks, you know, opens their eyes, it's also all worth that. I mean, in all these interviews I've done, you know, more than once I've heard, you know, an artist say, you know, yeah, I came from this small town, I was doing this or that, and then I saw this show and I thought, wow, you can make that, someone can do that. And it's just suddenly, you know, because we never really hear, I think even if you're in New York, you don't really hear about conceptual art and all the kind of things an artist could possibly do. You think it's about drawing and how good you can, you know, cartoon something. And you know, as a kid, and for a kid to walk into a show and just think, wow, I didn't know artists could do all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, just one of those experiences from a small town, you know, or a conservative town, could be worth the whole project, I would think.
Yeah, and to be honest, like that's been sort of the guiding light the whole time, is because I was a bored kid growing up in Kentucky. if I can just reach like one or two bored kids, and even if it's not immediate, but maybe like 10 years down the road, they're like, wow, like that existed when I grew up, and what an amazing thing. And it made me see that the world is bigger than this, and I can get out of here and do better. That's a win, you know, that's a success. So,
right. Well, it's great talking to you about all this. Before you go, I'm going to ask you, you know, the last question about what you're reading. Is there anything else that I should have asked or you want to say about this? There'll be links to everything in here so that people can learn more about the bank as well as your artwork. But is there any other thing that you want to add in, plug a show or anything before I ask you the last question?
No, I think that's it. I feel it went by so fast.
Yeah, it went by. So tell me what you're reading at the moment.
I am actually reading The Sight of Death. It's a book by T.J. Clark. It's about two Nicholas Poussin paintings that he spent a few months with. So it's basically his journals. It's a little nerdy, but the reproductions are gorgeous. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bryce, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure getting to know your work and the Milton Art Bank project.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.